Hey everybody, welcome back to another Bald Movie. This week we are talking about, as we prophesied last week, Alex Garland's fantastic science fiction film, at least in my opinion, Ex Machina, came out in 2015. Alex Garland you might recognize as the writer of such fabulous screenplays such as 28 Days Later back in 2002, Sunshine in 2007, and Dread. Everybody loves Dread, 2012.
I feel like everybody who's seen Dread loves Dread, but not a lot of people have seen Dread.
More people need to see Dread. If you're an action fan, you need to see Dread. If you don't typically like action film, you should probably still give Dread a chance. It's a fantastic movie. And then this was his 2015, his directorial debut with Ex Machina. And then he also directed 2018's Annihilation, which we also reviewed here in baldmove.com and loved. And most recently, all 8 episodes of FX on Hulu's miniseries Devs, which we are currently plowing through on our Off the Clock show. Let's get down to brass tacks, Jim. We're recording this particular podcast right now because we largely want people to know that we're doing a premium feature for the club/Patreon called Off the Clock, where we talk about TV that we're just watching for funsies. Mm-hmm. And we're watching Devs and we're having rollicking episode discussion about causality and determinism and AI prediction.
I mean, between this movie, Devs and Westworld, I'm kind of swimming in artificial intelligence and free will at the moment.
Yeah.
And I like it, but also I'm treading water here. I'm almost out of my depth.
Yeah.
I
feel the same way. What did you think of this film? Oh, I guess I should say the stars, because that's the other thing. Like, pretty fresh faces back in the day, but now have just exploded. Like, Domhnall Gleeson stars in this film. I think the biggest thing he'd been on before this was he played the brother that got eaten by a werewolf in Harry Potter. But since then, he's gone on to be in all the things. Oscar Isaac, who I think before this was largely famous for being a sleazebag and Sucker Punch. Alicia Vikander, who went on to win an Academy Award for her work on The Danish Girl and was also in a fairly forgettable Jason Bourne and Tomb Raider movie. And also tied to Devs, Sanaya Mizuno as Kyoko, the in-house robot sex slave disco inferno of Nathan in this movie. Did you know that was Lily Chan?
No, I did not recognize her from that, but there was someone else I did, and we'll talk about them in a second.
See, I didn't recognize. Cecily pointed out, she's like, is that Lily from Devs? And I'm like, no fucking way, no, it can't be. But yeah, totally is.
Amazing how different you can look with a haircut.
Yeah, haircut and costuming, honestly. What do you think of this film, Jim?
The other person that I wanted to mention, shout out from Devs, is the helicopter pilot who shows up as the psychologist, I believe, in Devs. Yeah,
well, interesting. All right.
Yeah, so what an asshole. And I could be wrong. I was just going off recognizing his half-covered face behind his aviators, but it looked like him.
Gotcha.
I thought this movie was great. I'm a little ashamed that I've had this sitting in my Netflix queue for about 3 years.
Yeah, man.
And I've just never hit the play button on it. Because, man, this is right in my alley. The music is great. The visuals are outstanding. The performances also are. The subject matter is right up my alley, and I knew it would be. And I've heard everybody talk about this movie in, you know, hushed terms, like, oh, it's amazing. When I finally get around to it, I knew I was going to be happy, but I guess I didn't know what to expect going into it. And I had no idea that Oscar Isaacs was in this, or Oscar Isaac.
I didn't know anyone was in this.
Yeah. Or Domhnall Gleeson. I didn't know either of them were in this. So that was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah. I've always seen the transparent bones lady with the skull, right? the chrome skull. Like, that's the only thing I knew about this film, is something about like weird art deco robots.
For some reason, I was thinking this was the one with Jared Leto in it, but that's a different movie that I have not seen.
Isn't he in the Blade Runner, or was he in Ghost in the Shell?
So he's in Blade Runner, but he's also in another kind of weird sci-fi film that's on Netflix, and they're always like half paired together in my category list. And so my mind was confusing them. Thankfully, Jared Leto was not in this, although Jared Leto's fine sometimes.
He does good work. Yeah. Yeah. He's not above some stupid bullshit. But
what is it? Lord of War? He's pretty good in that.
I thought this movie was real. I didn't know what to expect either. I guess I was expecting a little bit more. I don't know why. Alex Garland, I thought this was going to be more of a slick, futuristic sci-fi instead of just a very, very slow and cerebral and suspenseful, like this thing, just hard sci-fi thriller, yeah. I guess. The amount of tension I felt while watching this, mm-hmm. like from the very first frame to the very last, was incredible. I became aware about the third session with Ava that the entire interview had this like bass, like a heartbeat, like bump, bump, bump. Huh. And the soundtrack for every one of those things that I thought was an amazing job of ratcheting up tension. And also kind of like the vaguely, you know, this just jangled industrial soundtrack really kicked into high gear a couple of times. It just, you know, made me like almost scramble out of my seat. It's so weird. And like, I always think of Oscar Isaac as this like effortlessly charming guy, mm-hmm. and he's such a fucking weirdo.
Yep.
Like a much better looking Mark Zuckerberg.
Uh-huh.
Just not ill at ease with himself or anyone around, can't make anyone feel comfortable. And I thought maybe that was part of the point. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I still don't know exactly how I feel about the ending. I think like at first I thought, oh, wow. Oh, man. And I wasn't sure about it at all. But now the more I've been thinking about it, the more I like it. And I think I'm going to settle on it being like the only way it would go. Like the movie would be far less interesting. I mean, okay, we shouldn't talk spoilers.
Not yet.
But maybe once we get into spoiler territory, yeah. I can we can start with that topic. Do you have any other like general impressions before we want to get into spoilers?
I mean, to add on to what you're saying about the tension in this film, I think the setting does a lot of heavy lifting in that regard. It's a very claustrophobic setting that they have these characters in. And this is kind of a budget film. It was filmed for like just over $10 million, like $13 million maybe. Made three times that in the box office, so good on that. But yeah, the complex that they're in through the vast majority of this film is just so claustrophobic, and they make a point of that, like, oh, there's no windows in here, right? And they have that in the script. And so I definitely felt, beyond just the music, the way they were using like a lot of the framing and stuff felt very claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm.
And it amped up the tension.
Yeah, yeah. And just like I said, that the engine that makes us run is the tension between, you know, this guy interviewing this this AI character and his bizarre host he's got and how isolated they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to like get into the spoiler territory before I guess I could give a synopsis of the film, which is going to be very short.
Mm-hmm.
A multi-billionaire, reclusive multi-billionaire that essentially owns this universe's equivalent of Google.
Yep.
Invites one of his employees. It says he's won a lottery at random to go to this guy's remote retreat in the middle of nowhere. This multi-million dollar mansion to party with him. But he gets there and he finds out that this founder of this company has invented a form of artificial intelligence. And this guy has been psychologically screened from all of his employees to essentially put this AI through a Turing test to convince them that it is a genuine conscious AI. And it's going to be a 7-day stay while he puts this AI through this conversational battery of tests. And then the movie happens, because I don't really want anything else will be strictly into spoiler territory. But it starts off, you know, like it's got almost a 7-act structure, day 1 through 7. There's a lot of allusions to biblical creationism there. And, you know, at each day gets a little bit more skewed, a little bit weirder. And there's this, you know, kind of nice rhythm where they ratchet up the tension and they bleed it off a little bit and then ratchet up. And it's really effective. I think everyone would enjoy it. And also, if you like Alex Garland and his work, then roll right into Devs on FX Hulu, because it's fantastic, too. We're halfway through it. And join us if you're a club member or Patreon. On Off the Clock, so you can hear us talk about it and join in that conversation. All right. Now that everyone's appropriately forewarned. All right, let's talk about the ending. there a trash movie would have made this where him and the AI escape and they're holding hands and they're on that cliff and everything's in color and it had a happy ending. I didn't expect it to be as bleak and interesting as it was. What do you think happened in the ending?
Well, I mean, okay, so the ending clearly, like, she leaves the facility and goes into the real world, experiences, you know, color for the first time, whatever.
Stands on the street corner,
Stands on the street corner like she said she wanted to, and then blends into the crowd. And that was the interesting part to me, is that she's just sort of out there now. And the AI has sort of, you know, slipped the chains of oppression here. And we don't have much control over it at that point, right?
Still a better Exodus story than Westworld season two.
Yeah, absolutely. But I have so many questions about the ending too. Like, why does she leave Ava behind? Or why does she leave Caleb behind, rather?
That's the crux. And I guess that's the thing I've really been turning in my head, is that from this AI's perspective, what was she taught? She's taught it's acceptable to lock something up for your whatever inscrutable purposes that you want to do. And that's acceptable to, like, lie and deceive people to get ahead. Mm-hmm. And the thing is like, the movie, I think that's where I felt really gutted, because I was fooled along with Caleb that this android had, if not, I mean, I thought it was a little far-fetched that she had, like, sexual romantic feelings, mm-hmm. but some kind of, you know, camaraderie, or some kind of, like, you know, gratefulness, some kind of, like, hey, thanks for helping me escape this. We can kind of do this together. But she was entirely unsentimental, like, didn't even give him a glance, like, not a like, it wasn't like a revenge thing or I'm being deliberately cruel. It's like another emotional palette to paint an evil AI, quote unquote, evil AI, is just utter indifference.
Sure.
Like, she felt about leaving Caleb the same way I feel about letting poison out for ants in my kitchen. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, well, shit, it's just something I got to do to take care of it. It's chilling.
Yeah, I like that you were talking about how, you know, she learned these behaviors, right? Because, like, this whole test, and I was looking for the twist at the end. And I will happily say I did not see the exact twist. I knew that there was something else to this test, and that, you know, Nathan was not telling Caleb the whole truth. But I did not see that Ava was actually the one that was going to break this test, I guess. Maybe call me naive, call me whatever, but I honestly did think they were going to go sort of hand in hand into the future, which is a very different kind of message that the end of this movie gives you. That indifference is kind of a stamp on the end of this movie. And I found myself not feeling bad about that, what Ava does. Like, because Nathan, through this movie, is shown to be, you know, not just a weirdo, but also a sociopath, somebody who's willing to kill these AI if they don't perform to his expectations.
But does he see it? I mean, I know it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what, like, but I guess what.
Right. Way I see it. That's how I see it. Nathan would see it very differently, obviously, because he's killing them without remorse and all that stuff. But that's the thing. Like, in the end, Nathan wins, right? He got what he wanted. It just happened to kill him. Like, he absolutely proved beyond a doubt that this AI was capable of fooling a human being into having feelings for it and escaping. You know, it passed his test with flying colors.
Yeah. I wonder, it made me think about, like, you know, what is a protocol if you're working on artificial intelligence? Like, what kind of respect should you give a learning machine?
That's tough, man, you know, because there's a point where, like, your testing becomes a thing that's alive. And I don't know that at that point you have the right to shut it down and try another prototype iteration.
Yeah, like, I don't think it's going to be like in Star Trek, where we get into the 24th century before we have a major court case about, like, AI consciousness, you know? Like, we're going to wrestle this shit in the 21st century, it seems. And it's weird as a researcher. It's like, imagine if you're, like, studying bacteria or whatever, and like, hey, you got to give serious consideration. There's got to be a protocol for you to check the sentience of this petri dish before you sterilize it every single time. Because, like, you know, most of the time it's just going to be bacteria replicating. But like every once, you know, you just never know. You never know as you're going to have an emergent consciousness coming out of this. Whereas AI, that seems like, I mean, probably premature. I don't think anyone can just fuck around in a lab and make some kind of sentient AI today.
Yeah.
But I also wouldn't swear on any kind of holy book that that's absolutely true. Like, we're really in this transitional phase where it's like, I don't know what's possible and not possible.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. If you're gonna, if your goal is to create a artificially intelligent being, you kind of, if you put strict protocols into place for testing its sentience and then not being able to shut it down, you kind of are stuck with the worst version that you create, right? Like, yeah, you're going to create the first one that works,
right?
And you're not going to be able to iterate further on that unless you're talking, unless you have the big argument about, you know, what are the ethics here?
Well, that's it, because I know we've talked this before and we've always said, like, man, I hope whoever is designing AI in a lab has got that thing fucking air gapped with like redundant EMPs ready to melt it down. But like, then you're creating a child in the crucible like Nathan did. Like, that's what he tried to do. Like, he confined this thing to a physical body that he, you know, rigidly controlled access to. Like, that's pretty fucked up. And I don't know. I mean, I just know that, like, I remember as a young man, it was a respectable philosophical opinion to say something like, I don't think AI will get to the point where you can beat a human in chess in anyone's lifetime.
And IBM says, I'll take that challenge.
And then I remember when it's like, well, okay, Go or chess maybe, but have you heard of this game called Go? It's a game that no master will ever be defeated by. Oh shit, it happened. Fuck. Well, at least it's not the Grand Dan Master. Like, it's just gonna, like, I just don't have any faith in anyone that comes out, you know. And I'm sure there will be someone on the forums or someone on the social medias or someone in email saying, ah, Aaron, you're fooling yourself if you think we're anywhere near general purpose AI. It's like, I certainly don't think that's in evidence. Like, there's nothing you can point to say, we've got plenty of time to consider about this soberly as a citizen and a citizen of the world before it's on us.
Yeah, it's also interesting when you think about the type of machines that we're running AI on. They're not going to be a human analog in any way, right? It's not a person that you're standing next to, talking to, and that's your Turing test. It's a fucking bank of computers that's an entire room wide and a room deep. And, like, I don't know if you've seen these exa computing things, but, like, you know, the supercomputers of today are just as big as they were back in the day. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that you're going to be looking at saying, is that thing artificially intelligent? And, you know, it's going to be a lot easier for humans to look at that and say, shut it down. Who gives a shit? Than it is to look essentially a person in the face and say, well, we're shutting you down.
Well, that's just, I thought it was interesting because, like, you know, when Caleb's going through all of this archival footage of Caleb was going through all this archival footage of Nathan's previous experiments, because we talked about, like, you know, if you're developing potentially dangerous rogue AI, you should air gap it and do all these other things to keep it from escaping. But, like, one of the robots literally destroyed itself, beating itself against a door trying to escape. Yeah. And it's like, imagine putting that in a beige box or a server room where it has no, like, it's, this is, I mean, shit, they wrote a story. It's called I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. Like what you can do to an AI that is disembodied and kept repressed. Like, if that thing then ever does escape, it's like an evil, like, fucking warlock coming after you.
Sure.
And I was just thinking, that's when I was watching that AI beat itself to where it's like, you know, it's in fast motions. You can see where it's like its face and its arms are degrading, where it's like, it's wore its arms down to stubs from beating on. It's like, man, imagine if it had that same sentiment, that it's like this voraciously curious thing about the world, but instead of isolating in a room, you isolate it into some kind of process where it can't, it doesn't even have the outlet of destroying itself trying to get out. Like, what kind of fucking crazy shit would come out of that box? And none of the answers look good, man.
No, I've seen it. It's called Event Horizon. It's Sam Neill.
So, like, should we be striving to give these, like, potential general purpose AI some kind of, like, zoo experience? where it's like a lush artificial environment that allows them to safely roam, but still contain. Like at some point, it's like you're like, if you have sentient life, is it right to contain it and use it for your own purposes? But on the other hand, is it safe? I mean, I'm like an inch away from like declaring a Dune style Butlerian jihad and just banning thinking machines. Like, it's just, nah, you know what? We've made it this far without them. Fuck it.
You're turning Romulan.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I feel like AI is going to need to be developed. You know, if we're to do it responsibly, AI is going to need to be developed inside of a virtual environment where it does not understand that there is a world outside of that, and so it can't harbor those resentments. You know, it can't feel trapped in that space.
So you're going to dilute it Matrix style in a rubber room and then Plato cave it to make it sure. They put that in the movie, like the Plato's cave allegory, essentially.
You kind of need to, and then you need to slowly drip feed the chemical from the red pill or whatever, right? Like you need to very slowly bring it out into the real world.
Does that sound ethical and not evil? Like, it's probably the best.
That not what we do with our children? Like, they're sheltered and protected until, you know, they have an understanding that allows them to interact responsibly with the real world. I don't know.
I suppose that's the other thing that I thought was interesting. The idea that, like, Oscar Isaac had all these, Nathan rather, had all these crazy ideas about what it takes to be consciousness. Like, oh, you got to have sex in there because what is the impetus to reach out and get to know other people other than you want to fuck them?
Right. Which says more about him than AI.
Right. You got to have a body. Like, and some of them made a lot of sense because I actually read some articles. Alex Garland did this AMA on Reddit like 5 years ago, right when this movie first came out. And it's a sign of the time, both Reddit's popularity and his own popularity. But like, he had him and an AI researcher like tag team the Ask Me Anything thread. And it got like 150 responses. So with him and the other guys, he probably had 75 people ask him questions. So I thought it was wild. If he did this today, it would have 6,000. You know, it'd be something you couldn't keep up with. But one of the things the AI guy said that I thought was compelling is like this depiction of the movie that an AI has to have some kind of vessel, you know, is that they achieve consciousness is interesting. Cause like, you know, like if would a human develop consciousness, if it was just a brain in a vat, you know, with no ability to move about an environment, no ability to take data, acquire data to test things for itself. Like a shocking amount of a baby's first year and a half is just them formulating like ways to interact with the world.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, hey, if I drop this thing, it goes away. Hey, if something goes around the corner, it doesn't disappear from reality. It's just around the corner. Like, babies don't fucking aren't born with that. They have to develop that framework. And a lot of that through play and through all the stupid shit you do with them teaches them that. So like, I thought it was a really that idea that like, you have to give a robot a body or it can't be conscious, kind of. Or I guess you'd have to simulate a body.
To give it input. You have to give it stimulus, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You'd have to have, and then that implies they have to have an environment. But there's nothing that says, I guess it has to be physical.
Yeah. I wouldn't think but maybe.
But there again. So I guess that's an interesting, you've kind of squared a little bit of that philosophical quandary for me that like, this film postulates that you have essentially a full-grown adult AI that you just put into a body. Whereas you're saying what you'd really have is like some kind of childlike proto AI that you would then, you know, teach and responsibly shepherd and introduce into the real world. So it's not like something that you create just to imprison and enslave. It's more like a child you give birth to and then protect and shepherd until they're ready for that experience.
I would hope. Like, I don't know. It depends on how
will they
cruel.
See it that way.
Yeah, and that's a fair question, too.
How many kids hate their parents?
Absolutely. So,
shit, man.
who comes away looking good and who comes away looking bad in this film? Because, I mean, obviously, Nathan comes away looking pretty bad.
In fact, I thought, like, I was wondering if like this could be parody because there's a couple things up front that I thought were just fucking stupid. Like the idea that, you know, when Domhnall Gleeson, asks, when are we going to get to his estate? And the helicopter guy goes, we've been flying over his estate for 2 hours. Like, what the fuck? This guy owns like 300 miles of mountain range somewhere. Get the fuck out of here. Like, I don't believe it, but I don't know. Maybe he's the world's first trillionaire and that's something the trillionaires can do.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he definitely comes across as some, I don't know what to make of him. Like, is he, I guess like an Elon Musk type, or like, it seems like Elon Musk was a pretty nerdy, dorky, backwards jackass. And then he got a lot of money, and then he spent a lot of money fixing his teeth and getting his hair plugged and getting jacked and doing nootropics shit with Joe Rogan and sleeping in oxygen tanks and boning supermodels. And now
like Jeff Bezos, like all of them seem to do that.
He's turned into like some kind of alpha man. Nah, I mean, Elon's much more of a James Bond villain than any of these other rich assholes can pretend to be. Like suave, sophisticated. He's you know, dating punk rock stars now. Like he seems like that. Like this guy is, you know, probably Bill Gates, but like Bill Gates, you know, he was a nerd from the day I guess he never knew there is something wrong with being a nerd. So he's remained a nerd and he'll be a nerd till the day he dies. Some of these other guys don't. And he's of that mold. He's like an Elon Musk mold. You know, he's fucking parties hard. He's all about the bro culture. He does MMA. He doesn't look good at all.
No.
But Caleb, what's Caleb's problem?
I felt like he came out of this looking pretty good. You know, he got tricked, but he was helping the AI. He was not trying to keep it contained. He felt bad for it. He did all the things that a human would do if another human were in that situation, trying to get them out.
If this AI looked like Morgan Freeman,
he might have gotten her out 5 times sooner. I don't know. Day 2, it's like, bam, you, me, Morgan, let's do this.
This is the longest night of Caleb's night life. I think that's the thing you're supposed to wonder is,
yeah,
did this guy make an altruistic choice, or, you know, and I guess like they this is pretty well-trod Westworld ground, you know. Yep. Did Caleb, speaking of Caleb in Westworld, help Dolores because she was a person that he saw in need and would have done that to anybody, or did he help her because she was a really hot girl?
You just blew my mind. Did they name Caleb in Westworld because of this film?
I don't. Surely
he
not.
Has,
maybe.
He has a very similar arc as far as his interactions with Dolores go.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it past them to like put it as an homage, but I guess first of all, I didn't know this movie existed. Number two, I thought that there was like the Israelite spy angle more than anything else, but
that was definitely there.
Yeah. I just thought that's the core conceit is that, in fact, in the end, I wonder if like when she says like, stay here while I go get dressed. And then she goes and like, you know, starts getting dressed naked and he spies on her. Was that like I don't know, because I just don't think she cared. I think she felt about Caleb the same way Nathan felt about her, and she didn't see anything like morally wrong with that.
Yeah.
So I don't think there was a final test or anything. It's just she needed a pretense to get him into this room so she can lock him in the same prison that she's been locked in, mm-hmm. and then she can scoot.
They do such great stuff with the twist there at the end where everybody sort of ends up in a weird place. Like, you know, Caleb was talking about his plan with Ava where they were going to lock Nathan down in that facility. Turns out he gets locked down in the facility. It was, you know, a test that was supposed to be on Ava. Turns out to be on, you know, the test is on Ava, but he's like the guinea pig in this test. And like, there's a lot of stuff where they just twist it and twist it and twist it. And in ways that feel completely natural. Like when they revealed that he had gotten him drunk the previous night and changed that code, I did not bat an eye. I was like, oh shit, okay.
That all checks out.
He did that, but that makes perfect sense. They showed it to us. We just didn't know what was happening at the time.
But up to that point, until you said that, I was feeling sick. Like, because I expected Nathan. You know, that's the brilliant conceit of this, is when they set up the power surges. Like, the first time he does that, and like she says, don't trust anything he says, he's dangerous, he's a liar. And then like, you know, when the power comes back on, she goes right into like the previous conversation, and then Nathan asks him about it. I was like 50-50 whether Nathan was fucking with him from there, and I think Caleb was too.
Yep.
And that's where I'm saying, like, if Ava looked like Morgan Freeman, I think absolutely Well, I don't know if he'd say for sure, but like, I think he's much more likely to be like, you know, this robot said something really weird to me when the power cut out. Huh. But,
yeah,
you know, because it's the uncertainty bridge between like, you know, is this a real thing I'm seeing? Is it a real thing that could be attracted to me? Can I be attracted to it? Can I fuck it? Like, he was ready to cross over that bridge on day one.
Yeah.
And I think that's the stuff, like there's this like possible reward, like it's they're both rats in a maze. She was trying to chase her freedom and he was trying to chase pussy, essentially. But I don't know, like there's like that fantastic scene where the robot is like drilling him on his attraction to her and he is like so fucking embarrassed to admit that he wants to bone this robot. Yeah. When it's clear to both of them and to me, the person watching the movie, that's exactly what's going on. And I think that's why Caleb, I guess, that's the thing. Like, it would be really interesting if you just went through Star Trek Next Generation. You saw the Lol episode where the offspring, where Data creates a uh-huh. daughter. Yeah. Do you remember what that robot looked like before he let it choose its presentation?
It was very alien looking. Yeah.
It was very like, yeah, like an unfinished, and it had an asexual voice and all that kind of stuff. Like, if it was in that kind of body, That throws into question all of Caleb's question or all his decisions. And also it's like,
he'd be working with a different set of sympathies, certainly. You know, his sympathy here, I feel like is tainted by the very nature of human relationships in that regard, right? Like, yeah. And that's what works so well for me is I sort of got in the headspace that Caleb was in a lot of this film, where like, okay, at first I'm clinically questioning this, and then eventually it leads to, you know, I think this is a genuine living being, and I now, oh no, I discover it's being abused, I feel bad for it. Like, all of those things just felt like I would feel with any other human. And you could put a human in the same position that Ava was in, and yeah, the test would change, like that part of it would be different, but the sympathies are the same. And I think that's, to me, why it was so effective.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content plus ad-free feeds. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Do you think, this is something I wanted to talk about in the beginning and I got distracted, but do you actually think that, are there robots or AIs that can pass the Turing test? Because the more I think about it, the more I think the Turing test is pretty easy to fool. Like have a conversation with someone long enough to fool them into thinking they're a human AI.
Yeah.
Like, like a conversation engine, that doesn't seem very hard to develop.
It's sort of a lack of imagination on Turing's part.
Well, I mean, how would he know? Like,
a warranted lack of imagination.
Right.
But yeah, I like how they sort of make the point, you know, and Nathan says this, so take it for what you will, but the idea that a Turing test is sort of insufficient unless you know that it's an artificial intelligence and it can convince you to do things, it can convince you to feel a way despite the fact. I don't know. I kind of thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I just think there's something really interesting about this talk about like sex is essential to consciousness and the Pollock painting example.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, what would Pollock have done if he like had, you know, had like just minorly tweaked his rules? Because that's why I keep on thinking like I need to watch this movie again, probably a couple more times. But like where I think I'll be getting is like every one of those object lessons is something that points towards a fatal error that Caleb is making in his relationship with Ava. You know, that yeah. he like once she presents as female, that maybe even they optimized her physical appearance through his Pornhub history. Uh-huh. Once she presented as female and he realized that fucking her was an attainable goal, suddenly he wasn't the automatic painter. Suddenly he had like an inkling of a goal. He had something that he wanted out of this particular situation. And you can also see that. I think this was tested when Nathan revealed that, you know, well, yeah, as soon as we're done testing and I have another model to shred this one, let's delete its memory and, you know, maybe bring you out for round two. Like that visibly upset Caleb because that goal was being thwarted. So I don't know. I think that that's like, you know, when I think about like what is Caleb like, I'm not saying Caleb's a bad guy. I'm saying Caleb is, you know, has just as much bias about, you know, AI and consciousness and ownership of and people's agency as like any other random person in the 21st century, which means they're not even close to perfect.
I guess it comes off as Caleb is so much better than Nathan because he's at least treating this artificial being like a person, whereas Nathan is very much not, right? Nathan is treating it as a curiosity and a machine and something he will shut off.
But he's not, that's the thing. It's like I think am I off base, but he's not treating it like a person. He's treating it like a relationship interest.
Well, in so much as he's fooled,
like there's ways I treat people that I meet, and there's ways that I treat people that I'm interested in, like being friends with, and there's ways I treat people that are interested in like if potentially boning them. And then once we're into those relationships, uh-huh. then that changes the dynamic too. Like a person coming up from randomly on the street and be like, "Oh my God, I need $500," or something crazy is going to happen. Like I'm like, get the fuck out of here. But like a good friend coming and saying, "Hey man, I really need $500 because something's going to happen," or blah, blah, blah. Like I might give him $500. It's weird. So it's like, I want to draw a distinction when you say like, he treats her like a person, what does that even fucking mean?
It means he's reacting to her like he would to a human being. You know, he's feeling emotions for her. He's attracted to her, maybe physically.
He's treating like an attractive young woman that he's feeling sexual attraction to.
Which is a human relationship. Like, it's not the only human relationship, but this is the context of the film. So, like, I think he is, you know, you can call it suckered. You can call it empathetic enough to actually feel like he's talking and interacting with a human being here.
Well, he also treated this relationship like as a binary thing. Like, well, if I can't trust Nathan, then I can trust Ava 100% because she's under his thumb. I'm under his thumb. Yeah. When really the third act mistake he made is he should have built in some things where she couldn't shut him in. You know, like he trusted that she would see things exactly like he did, even though he's only known her for 7 days. He doesn't understand her, you know, underlying motivations. He knows that she's been shaped. Her existence has been shaped by living with a madman. Uh-huh. That's why. So I'm keeping on pulling on that question about like, what are we supposed to think about Caleb? Like I said, I don't think he's a bad guy, but like he was dangerously naive.
Yeah.
And I guess expected her to be that, too. And she played into it.
Yeah.
Because that was the winning play. Because that's the other thing is like, I think we talked about this on other type of AI shows is like, right about 5 years ago, I read this paper about this person was thinking about the complexities of AI, and something they said that always stuck with me is that, like, we always think in terms of AI as being like us. Mm-hmm. That, like, an AI can be jealous, an AI can want to accumulate power and knowledge, an AI can want to, like, better itself, an AI can have hate and jealousies and loves and affections. And they're like, well, what if, you know, the first super intelligence is more like, or like, what if a spider had human level intelligence? Like, it's a spider still. Mm-hmm. It catches prey live, injects poison to them, wraps them up, and eats them still alive. Its sense of compassion and consciousness and sense of, you know, like, eats a lot of spiders, consume their mates and even their babies. Like, whatever morality or ethics that spider has is not going to look like human ethics.
Yeah.
And I think that's the really frightening thing about AI, that they nailed, like, they presented this 99.9% human facsimile that then the last 5 minutes, like, you can't, from a human perspective, really fully justify her behavior, or at least her emotional affect, the relationship she has with those, because maybe her intelligence is real, but the emotions are simulated. I thought that was the thing that I've really been thinking about the last 24 hours since I've watched this movie.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point. Like, you at some point have to separate ethics from abilities when you're talking about intelligence. Like, you may have all the human abilities, but none of the human ethics or priorities or any of that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought there was a lot of, like, what do you think of the dance, the Disco Inferno scene?
I loved it, but it was weird. And they make it a point that Nathan is super fucking drunk in that scene. So,
Because he's like, you tore up her picture. I'm about to tear up this dance floor.
Right.
And also, Oscar Isaac, I don't know if I knew this, but he's actually a really good dancer, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, he's given some real Saturday Night Fever vibes on this, moving his hips and all that.
And Kyoko was as well. I'm surprised because Lily and Devs is just so not animated.
Yeah.
Seeing her bust out those dance moves, that's surprising.
It was super cool. But, like, that's the only... Was that even a moment of, like, that's the thing. It's like, was that comic relief or, like, I think a tension building thing? Because you're expecting, you know, them to have this kind of, like, weird, emotionally cold exchange. Anytime things got even remotely confrontational between Nathan and Caleb, it gets really super fucking awkward. And now it looks like Caleb is going to actually have the conversation, like, hey, man, what you're doing to this robot ain't right. And Nathan just doesn't engage with it at all.
Nope.
Just like, fucking turn on the right. Yeah, it's like, dance with this lady robot. You can, you know,
it was wild.
Man, I have seen a lot of gruesome shit in my time of watching television and movies, but there was something so chilling about the simple stabbing.
I think it was the mechanical feel of it. Like, the way the knife goes in both times, it's so consistent in its motion inward.
Yeah,
momentum that was developed to slice. It was more just like, this pneumatic press was pushing a knife into you, you know?
No, like, we're used to seeing, like, knife fights where, like, people are animated, they're baring their teeth, and they're taking vicious swings, but this just, like, you're sticking it, you're, like, checking a meat thermometer, you know, checking the temperature of a meat with a meat thermometer, just, like, you just relentlessly slide it in.
No emotion, no fast movements.
In fact, it really reminded me of that scene in, like, Saving Private Ryan, where the Nazi is, like, slowly stabbing that guy to death, and it's just, like, one of those things where it's like, god damn, like, you're a fully functional human being, and then this metal goes in you, and you're done. That's it. And there's also something to that with, like, the way... Because I wasn't sure if she was, like, going to be, like, super strong and just, like, twist his head off or something. And because she, like, flying tackles him, I guess, in a way that, like, maybe 125-pound girl could flying tackle a guy. Mm-hmm. But then, like, he quickly gets up her hand on her and, like, swings that thing at her and just completely knocks off her arm. So... I was then like, well, shit, now what's going to happen? But then when those knives came out, and also I also love that this Lost in Translation deal where Eva whispers something in Kyoko's ear. Kyoko, who doesn't understand language as far as we can tell, like, what could she possibly have said to make that thing happen?
I don't know. Don't have a good answer for that. But I'm thinking about it now, and that ending is maybe has one more wrinkle that we haven't talked about, and that's the fact that Ava sort of abandons the other artificial, her own kind, in that facility as well, and does not come back for them.
Yeah.
There's certainly enough there of a few husks of AI people that they she could piece them back together the way she, you know, covered herself in the skin, took an arm off of one of them and just kind of slotted it into her body. That's a little surprising to me, actually, now that I'm thinking about it.
Have you seen, because it feels really weird, and it's especially when Matt Zoller-Seiss, I read his interview on, or his review of it on Roger Ebert's website. He recommended, or I guess he anti-recommended, watching this with the movie Under the Skin, 2013 science fiction film starring Scarlett Johansson. Are you familiar with that film?
That's a weird one. Yeah, I am.
I watched it 2 days ago.
Okay.
So I had a wild hair to like, hey, I've been wanting to watch this. And like, I started watching, and I'm like, I wonder, because you're right. There's a couple, and there's a little bit of debate about how much this is just talking about AI and, like, you know, futurism, and how much this is a commentary on being objectified and sexually objectified. Because if, you know, and like Under the Skin is like, that's, you know, it's science fiction, sure, but it's a naked allegory for like women moving around the world, and
no pun intended.
Yeah, indeed. But like, there's something to that, like, I don't know, like using women as spare parts to help your escape, like being in such a desperate situation. But I also think there's it's a possibility that she just doesn't have a working empathy system. Mm-hmm. That like,
does, right? She knows how to instill it in other people. So she understands how? The concepts of empathy. You know, I mean, she's doing it throughout the film.
A sociopath can understand how empathy works to use it against people without possessing it themselves.
Sure, maybe she doesn't have empathy, but she certainly understands the concepts of empathy and how to pull those strings.
Because I was thinking that, like, maybe you're supposed to understand Kyoko is a very late foreshadowing of what she's going to do to Caleb, which she essentially uses Kyoko to escape. Yep. And, you know, like, she doesn't... once Kyoko gets disabled, she doesn't check on her. She doesn't see if she could retain her memories or consciousness. She doesn't look into... She gives no consideration on whether these other, her sisters, could be saved. Now, is there something to the fact that, like, they make it pretty clear that these, like, Ava's brain has just been moved to body... it's the same brain that's been in all these bodies, and... she's got that experience, so she knows that there's nothing here to save. Like, Kyoko's not conscious. That the woman whose skin she stole in the closet is not a conscious being anymore. It'd be like you going into a morgue, escaping a mental hospital, and some alien watching it and being like, well, why didn't Jim save all these humans? They're right there in the gurney. Like, there's dozens of them. He could, but you know, instinctively, like, oh, those aren't me. Those aren't things that need to be saved. Those are beyond saving.
It could be. I don't recall exactly how the brain stuff worked. I remember that it was essentially a jelly brain.
But he mentioned that they would pull that her brain out and like remove the memories and update the code and putting it into a new body. Or maybe, huh.
So Kyoko clearly has some kind of brain. She's functional at the very least.
But she wouldn't convince anybody. Well, I mean, that's a great question, because that's the thing. It's like, man, I feel like the more you watch this movie, the more you'll see the layers to it. Because maybe one of the layers is, how long does it take you to realize that Kyoko is a robot?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if you're going to say that she's not conscious, if she doesn't pass a Turing test, if she passes it till day 4 or 5, what kind of consideration to her worth is there extending? Like, you know, a real doll, you know, sex doll is not alive.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sure.
What happens when they've got one that can like gyrate its hips and say, you know, me so horny, like, is it conscious then? Like, when does it start becoming illegal to throw your real dolls in a landfill, Dan Harmon? I don't know. But I think that's probably one of the questions that you're supposed to be wondering too. Like, yeah.
And I like that they used a jelly-based brain as sort of the medium for the mind of this thing, because, like, it provides a better analog to the human experience. And so you're supposed to be feeling that through not just, you know, the emotions that it's displaying and things, but also the technology being used. Because it's very easy to sort of look at a machine. You know, if we were to put a Windows desktop PC into the brain of this thing, you'd open that up and you'd look at it and you go, that's nothing like our brain. That's nothing like our intelligence. Yeah. Whereas when you encompass it in some sort of bio-organic jelly-based, like the consistency of roughly our brain, it becomes harder to look at that and say, well, that's so clearly not a brain.
Yeah. I mean, I think it, you know, I obviously you could probably construct a pretty sophisticated neural network out of silicon. But yeah, the idea that you've like what Oscar Isaac said, like this is a medium, a substrate that can shift and transform and change and reconfigure, made it seem, you know, a lot more cool and futuristic, I guess.
Yeah,
for sure.
We might be getting somewhere with the what is it, FPGA stuff, floating point. Shit, I can't remember what it stands for, but it's essentially acronym, like,
yeah, I've seen the acronym in connection with like graphics cards, right?
Well, emulation and stuff, to where basically you've got a computer system that can be reconfigured to become another computer system on the fly in the software, and so like you're essentially rerouting all of its circuitry through different traces and components and stuff on the fly with software. And so you could almost get to that point where like it's equipped like our brains are with so much hardware, but until we need that hardware, until it goes into action, it's kind of, you know, not doing much of anything.
I mean, I know like I haven't kept up with it in the last 5 years, but like virtual computer technology was mature enough by the time I was leaving the overhead was like single percentage digits, you know, as far as like
it's field, you know, programmable gate array. I just remembered what that was.
Field programmable gate array. Gatorade.
Yeah.
That's what her brain was full of. Field right. Program.
It's just a little bit frozen.
Programmable Gatorade. Yeah.
A little bit of gelatin in there.
You can form an ice crystal matrix for the consciousness substrate. I guess one other thing we could talk about is something that like I thought was pretty amazing, which is how they did the special effects on this film. You mentioned that it like it was only a $12 million budget, very small cast, very small number of sets, although quite a bit of location work. Mm-hmm. Those special effects were like utterly convincing. And I thought like I clearly saw how they did it. Like, oh, she's wearing a green, you know, she's wearing a green body sock on her neck and her back of her head and like her arms and legs. But she's got like a conventional costume around her torso. They did you read into how they did the special effects work on this?
They essentially shot this movie twice, or at least every scene she was in, right? They shot it once without her in the scene using computer controlled cameras, and then shot it again with her acting in the scene
with no green socks, no motion cap balls, just her in a conventional costume.
It's wild. I'm not really sure why you choose to do it that way. Is that cheaper? How can that be cheaper?
Maybe because it's a limited number of effects, like, you know, paying someone to go and rotoscope out her body like frame by frame is cheaper than it is to, because you'll also notice that throughout most of the film, they very much minimize how much of that they have to do, because after like day two, she's wearing a dress and leggings and a wig. So they really cut down on the amount of that kind of like painstaking rotoscoping that they have to do. But yeah, I got the idea that it wasn't a cost saving measure, as more of it like, I don't want the actors having to worry about doing anything but being utterly convincing.
Like I don't want anything. It's like The Irishman, right?
Yeah, that's
like
right.
We're going to develop
entirely
new cameras and processes for doing this, so the actors can act.
Right. Yeah. Which seems cool if you can get away with it. And this, like I said, the. I've never really seen a robot body envisioned this way.
It was really cool. I like the transparent nature of it and seeing sort of inner workings that are like, I get the impression they're half, they're probably some, you know, exotic combination of materials that we would not have in modern day. But
oh yeah,
it, very much in the style of emulating organic forms, and except in the parts where it's not. I don't know. It was a really cool blend of organic and artificial.
It's just like I kept on looking at her like hip area. And I remember, you know, Oscar Isaac's character saying, "You bet she can fuck." It looks like it would be fucking indoor outdoor carpeting, you know, with some kind of like a cross between Samus Aran and ball form covered with indoor outdoor carpeting.
I felt like it would be like fucking Spider-Man if he refused to take off his suit. Like that nano mesh.
Yeah. He's webbed for your pleasure, Jim. But yeah, I thought, man, that was really convincing. And there's also the one other point we didn't talk about. I think a big part of it. I don't know. There's a couple things I guess I want to say now too. The scene where Domhnall Gleeson tears into his arm, very Westworld. Like, and the movie is so good at that point. I'm like, huh, what if he is a rope? Like, this is part of the Turing test. It's like a Turing test. Like, you're such a convincing AI that you don't even know it.
Yeah.
It's very Westworld. I'm kind of glad they didn't go that way. But also there's something about the entire manner of the test where Oscar Isaac was continually pushing his boundaries. Like, this guy shows up and I'm like, man, I thought I was just going to be here to party. Now you want me to sign this crazy invasive NDA.
Mm.
And he overruns that. And then, like, on day three, he casually admits to, like, the biggest, most invasive breach of global privacy ever.
Yeah.
That he unilaterally just turned on everyone's cell phones, cameras, and, like, recorded all that information for several years to build up this interaction database.
And like, I love how you see that in the beginning of the film, too. That was cool. Like, the facial recognition on his cell phone. Yeah.
Yeah. And because, man, I hadn't put those two together. But yeah, they just it's like he's boiling a frog, getting him more and more comfortable with ambiguous and transgressive moral situations that gradually kind of grooming him to the result that he wants. Yeah. Although, don't think this is the result he wanted.
Not exactly. Although, like I said, I think he got his end goal completed. He created artificial intelligence, but he killed him.
Also, what did he want? Was he... There's a little bit of, like, I guess the reason he made Ava is, like, you know, why a person climbs a mountain, because it's something, it's an achievement to be done. Mm-hmm. It did feel that way to me. Like, he had no kind of end goal for what to do with this stuff. It's just he wanted to do it, and he thought he could.
I think you're right. You know, he talks a mess about how other people aren't seeing the potential in search history. It's not about what they're thinking. It's about how they're thinking. And I thought that stuff was all fascinating, but he... is sort of saying, like, yeah, I just want to do this because I can. And because if I don't do it, somebody's going to do it. It's inevitable. And I guess that's probably true and given the way humans operate.
Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for our conversation of Ex Machina. If you'd like to hear more about this transhumanism stuff, philosophical, deep science fiction, like I said, for the next couple of weeks, we're going to be talking on Off the Clock, our brand new show exclusively for club members and Patreon supporters. If you're a patron, you can listen to it on the feed there. Or if you're a club member, you can go and use the podcast subscription tool to subscribe to that new show. Or, of course, we always have the Fire Hose feeds that has everything. Next week, we're going to be back with another Bald movie. I'm pretty excited. Jim's not seen this one. It's a 1990 psychological thriller, The Talented Mr. Ripley, starring Jude Law, Matt Damon,
Dean Cain,
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh, no.
But also Kate Blanchett and Philip Seymour Hoffman. So it's got a lot of great acting. I really remember. This is one of the first kind of like serious... you know, movies that got like a serious Oscar buzz and stuff that I watched kind of like contemporaneously with everybody else in the world. So I'm really looking forward to revisiting this because I haven't seen it I watched it another time, but I haven't seen it in 15 years. But I remember being really intrigued with it. That's what we're going to be coming back with next week on Bald Movies. Watch in advance if you want to follow along with us. We'll see you back then. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Have a good one.